So I want us tonight to turn to Proverbs 31. So if you have a Bible or a phone or whatever, turn to Proverbs 31. And we're going to read together from chapter 31, verse 10 to the end of the chapter. So Proverbs 31, 10. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. So we're dipping in here right at the end of the book of Proverbs. Simon preached from this chapter the other Sunday, and he said, you know, it's very Hebrew to read from right to left, start at the end instead of the front. And we're doing that tonight, and I think this little bit of Proverbs 31 gives us a really brilliant window on the whole book. It helps us to open up the whole book. Proverbs 31, if you look at verse 1, is a selection of sayings of King Lemuel, taught to him by his mother. And she starts by telling him how to deal with his power, being the king, how to avoid the danger of indulging himself at the expense of his people and ignoring the needs of the poor and the needy. And it ends with this section, which we've just read, which seems to be the sort of the portrait of the ideal wife. And it's that last part we'll focus on, verses 10 to 31. And as we read, you might have thought that the description of this woman is pretty amazing, isn't it? Just cast your eye over it again. She's an early riser. She's late to bed. She's a property developer. She's an excellent cook and imports her food from abroad. She makes her own clothes. She starts her own business in retail. She's heavily involved in charity work. Her husband is also a pillar of the community. She's famous for her wise advice. And she's completely at peace with herself and with the future, so much so that she can just laugh at what is to come. She's never lazy. She's always working. She's loved by everybody, especially her family, and she loves the Lord. So to all the wives and girlfriends and all the women in the room who'd like to be married one day, I don't think this is supposed to be the gold standard for you to attain to. So please relax and don't worry about what's to follow. That's not the message today. And to all the boyfriends and husbands who've been directing raised eyebrows and nudges and so on, you can stop doing that now. I don't think that is how this passage is to be understood. So wives, do not try this. You'll be dead within the month. Do not try it. See, verse 29 does tell us this wife surpasses all wives. There is nobody that could live like this. It would be totally unreasonable and impossible. Her husband has pretty much nothing to do, does he? He just sits at the city gate chatting with the elders. And she has everything covered at home and at work and spiritually. So, of course, verse 10 asks, who could find a wife like this? This picture goes beyond any normal experience. It's not supposed to be for the women, you know, the woman who's hopeful to be a wife or who is a wife. This isn't supposed to be what you're supposed to live up to. And for the guys, this isn't supposed to be what you're looking for. See, that word find in that verse, a wife of noble character who can find, that word find is a slightly unusual one. A wife of noble character who can find. That word's used a couple of times in Proverbs and in other places, not just to mean to find something as in to get it, but to find something as in to solve it or to find out the answer to a riddle. That's how the word's used. So Samson in Judges 14 uses that same word. He says, if you'd not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. That's the kind of sense of this word, find. It's like to unlock or discover or to get to the bottom of. And the book of Proverbs itself begins by explaining that it is a book of riddles. It is a book of riddles to get to the bottom of, to find out. So Proverbs 1:1-6 begins, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. That's what we're dealing with the whole book. It's riddles, the whole book. So if you found Proverbs a bit odd as we've been preaching through and a bit difficult to understand, then it's actually meant to be that way. You're not alone, and it's having the effect on you that it should. It's a book of riddles. And we're likely to fall into trouble, actually, if we read Proverbs like a kind of just a list of things to remember and things to do. It just doesn't work that way. So, for example, Proverbs 26:4 tells us, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be just like him." Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be just like him. So, okay, got it. Remember that one. Don't answer a fool according to his folly. Thank you. Next verse. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll be wise in his own eyes. Ah. It's not surface level. It's not this sort of easy tips and life hacks for everyday living. These are riddles that are there to play with us and to tease us and to stretch us so that we might know something, so that we might find something out. So we need to resist the urge to look for immediate application and read these things as a kind of collection of fortune cookie nuggets. Proverbs is like a yeast that's supposed to get worked in carefully and absorbed and lived with for a while until it begins to have its effect on us. Ultimately, in Proverbs, we're meant to be discovering God's wisdom and allowing his spirit to change our hearts, to work deeply in us. It's not a quick fix. So I think reading Proverbs, we should be a bit like Bilbo. You know that moment when Bilbo meets Gollum under the Misty Mountains? We shouldn't be saying, a wife of noble character, brilliant, thank you, I'll try and put that into practice from now on. We should be asking, what's it got in its pockets is? Proverbs, what's it got in its pockets is? What's it getting at? And I think all of this is really ramped up, actually, in the chapter we're looking at, chapter 31, where we see there's actually no record of anybody called King Lemuel, the guy who supposedly wrote this. There's nobody called King Lemuel. His name means belonging to God. And this chapter is supposed to be his record of his mum's advice. But there is no king of Israel or Judah called Lemuel. I think it's most likely just to be a pen name for Solomon. He wrote the rest of the book, King Solomon. We know that he did use other names at different times. He's called Jedidiah in 2 Samuel. And we know that he was close to his mum. She actually crowned him. So it sort of makes sense. This could be Solomon using a pen name, a kind of secret identity. And he's passing on his mother's advice. The king belonging to God, that's what his name means, who writes down and passes on this wise advice from his mum. And in fact, the chapter before, chapter 30, is written by Agur, son of Jakeh, which means the gatherer, son of obedience. I wonder if there's a good chance that could also be Solomon, the one who gathers together these proverbs and sayings and so is obedient to the wisdom that he finds. So this whole book is a book of riddles. And in this final section that we've come to, it's, I think, the climax, the riddle within the riddle, if you like, written by a mysterious king, a person nobody can find or work out, and he's writing about a person nobody can find or work out. So it's a riddle within a riddle. This wife isn't a role model for wives today. She's a riddle. So who is she? Who is this wife in Proverbs 31? I think the answer has to be wisdom. the great theme of the whole book. This passage is a portrait of wisdom. That verse, verse 10, a wife of noble character, who can find? It sounds very like a verse in Job, Job 28:12, where he says, "Where can wisdom be found? Where does understanding dwell? Man does not comprehend its worth. It cannot be found in the land of the living." Sounds very similar. Who can find this? Who can find wisdom? There are a load of resonances then through this passage about the noble wife that resonate with wisdom in the rest of the Proverbs. So for example, if you've got your Bible again, look down. Proverbs 31:10, the wife is compared to jewels and rubies, and so is wisdom a couple of times through Proverbs, 3:15, 16:16, and other places. In chapter 31 and verse 14, we read that this wife trades in faraway places. Verse 16, she buys a vineyard. Verse 18, she gets profit. And wisdom does similar things all the way through the book of Proverbs. In verse 21 of our chapter, the wife richly clothes the ones she loves. And so does wisdom in Proverbs. Wisdom crowns people and bestows wealth on them. 31, the wife prepares food for her family and household. And in Proverbs 9, wisdom is pictured as preparing a house, setting a table, and calling the people in. So this amazing wife, she's really a picture of wisdom, of God's ways and God's values. And wisdom isn't an abstract teaching in this chapter. It's a woman, it's a person. She helps to create the world in Proverbs 8. She's constantly calling people to come and listen to her. And all the way through the book, wisdom is personified in this way as a woman. And it's a woman that we see finally at the end of the book here in chapter 31, woman wisdom. But all the way through the book, there's also another woman, and her name is Folly. Folly is a word that we don't very often use in the English language. It's not a word I've heard very often. The only time I've ever heard it used in conversation was when a friend of mine at college came into my room looking very grave, and he explained that his young cousin had just watched the film American Pie with their grandmother. And he described this as utter folly, which I thought was an excellent description. Folly is foolishness, it's just stupidness, the lack of good sense. And it often, as we use it, it seems to include a kind of sense of rashness and recklessness, arrogantly going on your way without a clue that it's totally wrong and stupid and out of place. And that's the other woman we see in the book, Folly. Wisdom and folly are set up as these two women in the book. Now, Solomon had a fairly unusual relationship with women, it seems. As well as being a bit of a mummy's boy, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. That is unbelievable, isn't it? There's lots of jokes just waiting to be told here about nagging wives and dripping taps and so on. I'm going to resist them all. But I will say that it seems for Solomon, you know, despite having this remarkable gift of wisdom given by the Lord when he was a young man, despite being made perhaps the most influential and famous ruler in the ancient world, it was his lust that caused him to fall in the end. It was his attraction to, his desire for all these women. He married women who turned his heart away to other gods and away from the Lord. It caused the great division between the kingdom of Israel, between Israel and Judah. That's how strong Solomon's desire was and how the lure of sex controlled him, it seems. So it isn't surprising, given Solomon, that the starring role in Proverbs should go to women. The desire for women is kind of the lens he uses to look at the world in the book. There are these two women fighting it out all the way through, wisdom and folly. And the question of Proverbs, which perhaps reflects Solomon's own bitter experience in life, is which will you settle down with? Which will you commit to? Which are you going to live with? Wisdom or folly? Wisdom or folly? So here's a quick overview of some of the descriptions of these two women. In chapter 1, wisdom is pictured as calling out in the streets and the squares, giving advice, trying to get people to listen. And again, wisdom is paired up with this prominent idea in Proverbs of the fear of the Lord. Wisdom and the fear of the Lord. So chapter 2, for example, begins, "My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding. Indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, if you look for it as silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. That's what it's all about, knowledge of God and his ways in wisdom. That's what Lady Wisdom, if you like, is all about. But there's always this threat just lurking under the surface of, in a way, adultery, of unfaithfulness to the Lord. Folly, the other woman, the opposite of wisdom, she's always there setting her trap. Chapter 2 warns against her seductive words because it says, her house leads down to death and her paths to the spirits of the dead. Then again, chapter 3, 13. Blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. That should sound familiar. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, in her left are riches and honor. Her ways are a pleasant way, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who embrace her. Those who lay hold of her will be blessed. It's a beautiful picture, isn't it? But then just around the corner again, chapter 5, here's folly. The lips of an adulteress drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. And in chapter 7, a little story. At the window of my house, I looked down through the lattice and I saw among the simple a young man, a youth who had no sense. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She is unruly and defiant. Her feet never stay at home, now in the street, now in the squares. At every corner she lurks. She took hold of him and kissed him. Come, let's drink deeply of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband isn't at home. He's gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money and he won't be home till the full moon. With persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. All at once he followed her, like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into her paths. Many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death. We come to chapter 9, and it lays out the invitations of both of these women, Wisdom and Folly. Wisdom has built her house. She's laid out a meal. She's calling from the highest point of the city to everyone who will listen, to come to her, everyone who needs advice, everyone who wants to learn the fear of the Lord, everyone who wants to live a long life. But in that chapter, Folly is calling as well. She sits in the door of her house and she calls to everyone who passes by, enticing them in. She says, stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. That's true, isn't it? But the people who are listening to Folly, the people who are listening to her, they don't know that the dead are there. Her guests, it says, are in the depths of the grave. Her guests are in the depths of the grave. That's a picture that keeps coming back through every description of Folly, isn't it? The grave. So Wisdom and Folly have laid out their stalls, and they've laid out their stalls for us tonight. One of them calls us to trust in the Lord with all our heart and never to lean on our own understanding. One of them appeals to all our desires to look after ourselves, to experience life as we want it, to go our own way. One of them offers long and fulfilling life. One of them is hiding a deadly secret. Which one of these two women, I wonder, are you spending your time with day to day? How do you think about God and yourself and reality? Who is calling the tune in your life? Is it wisdom or is it folly? Have you let God's wise ways shape the way you work, the way you relate to your family, the way you deal with your money, the way you think of yourself? And isn't folly always calling to us to be more worldly wise? Isn't folly always calling us to live like the people who are around us, to pursue worldly rewards, to be dishonest? You know, if we can benefit from it, then we could lie. Isn't folly always calling to us to put our needs above the needs of other people, to find opportunities to improve our career or status or comfort wherever we can? How do we spot her voice? How do we resist her honey-dripping words and her clever tricks? How do we do that? Well, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians that the cross of Jesus is the place where wisdom and folly are shown for what they are. The cross of Jesus is the place where wisdom and folly get separated out and we see them for who they are. Folly tells us to lean on our own understandings. As Disney would have it, to follow our hearts. As M people would have it, to search for the hero inside ourselves. To do what feels good and just to go with it. It's the natural impulse of the human heart. That's what folly is all about. The natural impulse of the human heart. Confront that with the cross of Jesus, and what do you get? The cross seems completely weak and foolish, doesn't it? What could a dead God do any good for anyone? What did self-sacrifice ever achieve for anybody? When could being weak accomplish anything? That's how folly sees the cross. And if the cross is our litmus test for wisdom and folly, and that's how folly sees the cross, then we've got to run. Because the death of Jesus is, Paul writes, the power of God and the wisdom of God. By the cross, God showed that his apparent foolishness is actually wiser than any human wisdom. His weakness on the cross is stronger than any human strength. And at the cross, folly is shown for who she is. Human wisdom, our human hearts are shown for what they are. A light is shone on them by the cross. And as Christians, we're defined by the cross of Christ, aren't we? We're defined by the death of Jesus. And it means we're defined by listening instead to wisdom and rejecting folly. Even though folly seems far louder a voice in the world around us, even though folly's voice seems to chime much more with the way our sinful hearts are normally more inclined, the living God has chosen to define himself by the cross of Christ. And he's called that his power and his wisdom. He's made the message of a suffering and crucified Messiah the way of salvation, the epicenter of his power and glory and wisdom. And the cross breaks in and shows us that his ways are so different to ours, so alien, so strange to our hearts and minds. But when we listen to his wisdom, we'll find it to be better than gold, better than jewels, a pleasant way, a path of peace, to be life itself. All the way through Proverbs, Lady Wisdom is wooing people to come to her so she can look after them. And here at the end of the book, we see she's settled down. She's made a home. The wooing and the courtship is over. She's settled down. The house is built. The table is set, and now she's going to become a wife and move in with the one she's marrying. The alternative to moving in with her is Folly's house, the house that leads down to death. Her false promises that look so tantalizing at first, but lead to the grave. It's a tale of two women, wisdom or folly. Which woman will you go with tonight? Solomon could almost finish his book with Moses' words, his appeal at the end of Deuteronomy. Moses said, I've set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life that you might live. Choose life that you might live. Now, some of you here tonight will know that you have been two-timing. You want wisdom. You want to spend time with wisdom, to know her ways. But you keep sneaking out to spend the night with folly as well. You want to live with the Lord and walk in his ways. But you entertain in your life all kinds of thinking and behavior that you know lead down to death. And some of you will know exactly what that thing is in your life, even as I say those words, as I say that description. You know that place where you've been secretly going out to see folly. You sat at the Lord's table tonight, but you know that you'll be in folly's home this time tomorrow night. How much longer will you dice with death? How much longer will you resist the good promises of God and lose out on all he offers? I guess perhaps others here will admit that actually you pretty much live in folly's house all the time. Whether it's pride for you or sexual sin or dishonesty or selfishness, you can see that your life is actually consumed by your pursuit of your own ends, leaning on your own understanding, doing things your way. You're in the most dangerous of places. Will you listen to wisdom from God's word this evening? Will you listen to wisdom's call to you tonight? In all this, the appeal actually isn't one of condemnation and accusation. It's an invitation. Tonight, we have before us an invitation. You are invited to live in a better house, to make your home with a better partner than your sin. You're invited to enjoy leaning on the Lord and not yourself. In the gospel, Jesus calls you to cast all of your burdens onto him. He says that if you're weak or you're heavy laden, come to him and he will give you rest. He tells us that only sick people need a doctor, and so he came for sinners. He comforts us by giving his time and his attention, his love and his mercy to all of the kind of people who live in folly's house. Those are the people Jesus gave his time to in the Gospels. The invitation to us is to recognize that we are sinners, that we do listen to folly, but to come to Christ, who has become for us wisdom from God. However far you feel, however sinful and needy you are tonight, however confused about life and the ways of God, anybody can come. All you need to do is rest and enjoy the home that he has set up for you and will run for you. Like that husband in Proverbs 31, you can have full confidence in Jesus, trusting in him from your heart. In fact, you need no longer lean on yourself, but on him completely. He is awake before you and stays up after you. He will bring you good and not harm all the days of your life. He works hard so that everything that happens to you turns out for your good. He opens his arms to you when you're poor and needy. He clothes you and protects you. You don't need to fear the future because he sees it and he laughs at it. All he says is wise and true. Jesus Christ is the answer to the riddle. He is your treasure and your reward. He will bring you life and blessing. And nothing and no one you desire can compare to him.